When Terry McRae was a student at Cal Poly State University back in the early 1970s, he had no clue that the school's learn-by-doing model would lead him on a life journey where he would eventually become the CEO of Hornblower Cruises. Considered the greenest fleet in America today, Hornblower employs wind and solar technology and operates the largest small vessel passenger operation in the country. I met up with McRae on the waterfront in San Francisco at his headquarters, which is fittingly aboard the historic ferry boat Santa Rosa, permanently berthed at Pier 3 on the Embarcadero. McRae talks a bit about his operations across America and most notably his passion for the untapped potential of waterborne ferry transportation as a viable commuting option, not only for San Francisco, but around America. We're with Terry McRae, the chairman and CEO of Hornblower Cruises, the concessionaire for the National Park Service.
We have the brand Alcatraz Cruises, and then we were also successful in winning in New York City the concession to carry passengers, ferry passengers, to Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island National Monument. That's called Statue Cruises. A little bit later, we also picked up the rights to do the Niagara Falls route, which is at the base of the falls. We run steamboats on the Mississippi River. We run high-speed ferries for the military. We run ferries for municipalities. So we do a lot of marine things. And as I said, I think we're the largest small passenger vessel operator in the country.
We were talking earlier this morning about transportation and about the interconnection between land and sea and public transportation. Talk to us for a moment about that disconnect and the hope for the future.
So if you think about it, back from when the United States was first colonized and settled, the expansion off of the coast, off of the 13 colonies, came when people started pushing inland. And they did that with boats. Once they figured out that they could build steamboats and riverboats and get as far as St. Louis and, you know, Montana, and as far north from the Gulf as St. Paul and all those inland cities, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, St. Louis, New Orleans, every one of those cities is a seaport initially, or a river port. That's really what got the United States to grow the way it did. You watch the expansion and where commerce occurred, and it was always on the water.
So in some ways, we were more connected back in the day than we are today, though.
We were way more connected by water in a slower sort of way. As time went on, of course, the railroads came, and they didn't always follow the rivers. They had to build bridges to cross rivers, which actually impaired navigation in some cases. But the railroad was kind of the next era, and it brought in industrialization. Of course, that helped the boats, because then all of a sudden we had steamboats also. And then we became more of an international trading partner. Really, like the Erie Canal is what made the New York port what it is, once you could bring goods to New York City and find them in the Great Lakes a few days later. You know, we've lost some of that connectivity. We don't think of ourselves as much as a seaport country anymore.
Tell us about the disconnect today in public transportation, and that how close something might be to BART. You're talking about taking a boat over to Oakland.
Well, oddly enough, most of the places where the new trains come now is nowhere near where the old ferry routes were. So in many cases, they've abandoned the water and the opportunity that it creates. But you'll find, I think, in many locations, New York and San Francisco for sure, where you aren't going to build any more bridges, probably no more BART tunnels. If you want to connect those communities, you're going to be doing it by boat. And the shame is that you can't really connect boat to BART very easily. There's only one station in all of the BART area here. In New York, it's the same way. There's only one place in New York City, really, where boats and subways and trains come together, and that's at the Battery, where we operate for Statue of Liberty. But it's a planning disconnect. You know, people think about planning as a 5 or 20-year cycle. People should think about planning as a 50 and 100-year cycle as well.
Going forward, is there a hope for connecting the dots?
I think that there's going to be more times when marine transportation is a solution. There's more technology now that's giving a better marine transportation alternatives. But you talk about adding more transportation to Silicon Valley. I mean, you can put hundreds of buses on the road, or you could put some high-speed ferries on the bay. The roads are already packed, so the 100 buses only exacerbate that problem, and there's nobody on the bay.
That's a really good point. That really is. It's like an open freeway.
Plus, if people think about quality of lifestyle, where do you think you're going to find the greatest enjoyment? Looking at the trunk and the bumper of the guy in front of you for hours every day are sitting in the comfortable high-speed ferry with your Wi-Fi and your nice glass of California wine.
It seems like such a no-brainer. Is it a pipe dream, or is it something that people are engineering and talking about and trying to introduce?
I don't think it's a pipe dream, but one of the problems, Tom, is that the public don't think of boats as part of their transportation system, so they don't subsidize it. If you think of a standard train or bus like BART or Golden Gate Transit, they're subsidizing the public, either through sales tax or general funds or whatever, is subsidizing 50% to 60% in many cases of the cost of that transportation.
But not so in maritime.
No, they don't think about subsidizing maritime. Now, the Bay Area has some maritime subsidies. New York, for the first time, is thinking about it. But I think once people realize boats should be just part of the fabric of the public transportation system, whether you go by bus, boat, train, ferry, Uber, whatever it is, it's all interconnected. I think there'll be more opportunities to get good transportation via boat.
Especially San Francisco Bay Area, where we are right now, it's close to gridlock in certain places. And so this really is a hope for the future, isn't it?
In my view, it is. Try to get home from San Francisco to the East Bay some night with all the construction and parking challenges and roadway challenges. One traffic accident and you're into it for 2.5 or 3 hours. So I think ferries will make a comeback in every area where there's water. I think people will learn to embrace it. It'll become part of their future and not just their old legacy from the past. We were talking about the past a little bit. When we look out on the water here, you can see Fort Mason over there. The finger pier is off of Fort Mason. Next to it is the location where the Alcatraz boat, water taxi, left to bring the kids to school and inmates back and the guards back. So they had their own transit system, much like the Park Service does now, so they can maintain good control and good security. So it's one of our legacies here to be part of that transportation system. It's a huge enjoyment for us to serve 6,000 people a day and provide great visitor services in a marine environment. I mean, that's the best thing that we get to do, is we get to do the hospitality and the visitor services on the boat and not just be transportation.
I was going to say, it's much more than riding a subway. It's an experience in itself just getting there.
That is exactly right. That is the way it works for us. And it's great for us to take our guest service routes and our food and beverage and hospitality experience and add the transportation element to it. So we have a great team of people and a great relationship with the Park Service, and we're looking forward to continuing that.
Terry McCray, Chairman and CEO, Hornblower Cruises San Francisco, thank you so much for sharing. What a great day to be out on the bay.
And thank you, Tom. I appreciate the chance to share a little bit of bird comments and the great view here from Alcatraz with the little fog just outside the Golden Gate. It's really a great day on Alcatraz.
National Park Service Public Affairs Officer Alexandra Picavet. The Alcatraz tour boat, it has wind generators and solar panels on a ship. That's really cool.
We have the greenest fleet in the country, and I would say actually in the world, taking people to a tourist location like this. Alcatraz Cruises has done an amazing job of taking their ships, retrofitting them so that they could be as green and clean as possible with wind turbines, with solar panels. They also have reduced the need of power in order to run them. They have much more efficient engines. It's been one of the best things that we've been able to do.
Alexandra, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Following the interview with McCray, he mentioned in passing that Hornblower Cruises also owns the luxury yacht MB Mojo that operates out of Newport Beach today and the vessel's connection with Morro Bay's history. One of the most iconic 20th century images associated with Morro Bay is the photo of Hollywood star George C. Scott's chartered yacht, the 84-foot-long MV Mojo, being smashed by a monster wave as it attempted to leave the harbor during a turbulent winter storm, January 28, 1978. Ignoring Harbor Patrol and U.S. Coast Guard's warnings not to attempt leaving the bay, Scott commanded his skipper to head on out. Morro Bay Harbor Patrolman Scott Mather.
It put Morro Bay Harbor on the map. When a friend of mine, Scott Redd, happened to be at the rock there with his camera, knowing the big swell and seeing the boat going out, and got ready to see if there was any incident that could happen, and there was. And he got the shot of a lifetime that went on the cover of Pacific Skipper magazine. From there on out, everybody knew Morro Bay and the entrance.
This day, that photograph is iconic. You see it everywhere. I have one in my garage.
There you go. I've used them for warning signs on our launch ramp. So,
the myth and legend and lore is that Harbor Patrol and or Coast Guard said to them, harbor's closed, do not go out.
Do not attempt to go out, but as the story that I've heard is George C. Scott was going to the Bing Crosby Open and up in Monterey and needed to get there. So,
He ignored Harbor Patrol.
Right, yeah. I mean, if he can take Europe by storm as General Patton, Morro Bay is nothing. But we proved him wrong.
What do they estimate the height of that wave?
That had to be a 22 feet.
That's the amazing thing. In the photograph, it looks like a 60-footer. It's in the boat, like you said, it's probably around 84-footer.
And all you see is bow, water, and a little bit of the stern. So 84-foot boat disappearing in a wave. Pretty impressive. Coast Guard did go out. There was damage to the boat. I believe George C. Scott's wife had some injuries, maybe a broken foot. The Coast Guard towed him down to Port San Luis because it was not safe to turn around and come back into Morro Bay. So,
and the wheelhouse windows were blown in, as far as I remember.
Wheelhouse windows were blown in, and the boat definitely sustained some damage when you go through a 20-foot breaking wave. It put us on the map, and today people are still talking about that. There's a new respect for the ocean, you know, from Morro Bay entrance. From that, now for the Coast Guard, we went from a cutter station to a motor lifeboat station, which is a surf station. They now have equipment here that can deal with breaking waves and boaters in distress in the surf. So that might have been a part of the outcome of that too, also.
Scott Mather, Harbor Patrol Officer, Morro Bay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're here with Lars Berg, Captain, Hornblower Fleet.
Welcome to the Motor Vessel Mojo. Part of California's history here on the West Coast started as a locally built boat by the Dittmar Donaldson Company back in 1969.
Part of West Coast maritime history lives on in a new incarnation, and now the Mojo looks like a movie location set to me.
Yes, many times has this boat been in the movie industry, not only for movies, but a lot of TV shows. We've had Hell's Kitchen filmed on it. Remember one time there was an MTV show called Who Wants to Date My Mom? And many others along the way. So when Barry White passed on, his family had chartered the vessel, went off the coast of Los Angeles for a memorial. Even Michael Jackson was there at the time. So
on board the Mojo. Let's talk about political history with the Mojo.
President Nixon actually used to do some rides on this vessel. He called it the White House on the Water. Matter of fact, Newport Beach has some history that we have an island called Bay Island, a small island that during Watergate, it was rumored to be one of his kind of hideout spots so that the press couldn't get to him as easy.
Thanks, Lars.
It's been a pleasure.
Rebecca Melke with Hornblower Cruises. Here we are sitting on our yacht, the Mojo. Right out of the Hollywood movies, literally. The Mojo, in addition to being charterable by corporate groups and family groups and weddings, is a Hollywood star. When I first climbed aboard today, I went, I know this boat.
Isn't it cool about this boat, though? You come on board and it feels really contemporary. It's very popular, and it's also still very stable and ocean-going, so you can charter this one out. In fact, we charter it for passage from Newport Beach to Catalina, and it's one of the boats that we can do whale watching, a private whale watching charter on, in gray whale season, and then summer is our blue whale watching season here in Newport Beach.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer reporting from Newport Beach, California.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com. Our associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Kim Schneider from Michigan, Elaine Masters in San Diego, Julie Henning, Eugene, Oregon, and Steve Cook, contributing from Little Rock, Arkansas, host of Arkansongs on NPR affiliate KUAR.